Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Mostly Mets podcast. I'm Rob Brender, along with Toby Hyde. We're going to talk a lot about the leader, the skipper, the manager of the New York Mets, Terry Collins. That's going to be the focus of today's show. But, of course, we'll branch out all over the place, talk about what's happening in Mets land, a little of the Jose Reyes talk, which I know is a hot-button topic. Before we get into anything that we're going to talk about today, first of all, Toby, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Okay. Yes, I figured I'd get to that before I did my little live.
Even though softball was rained out on Tuesday night.
Oh, shame. Well, you live in the Northeast. Got to live with it.
Yes.
All right, folks. We've made it easier for you to listen to all of SMY.TV's original podcasts. If you're a fan of the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SMY.TV audio network, and please make sure to rate and review our channel. We have a guest today as well. We generally do, but this guest is one of my favorites. He does a fantastic job of play-by-play for the New York Mets as kind of their number three guy in WOR. He also does the pregame and postgame show hosting, and that's Wayne Randazzo. So we'll get to Wayne today here in just a couple minutes. But Toby, you know, again, I think we're going to talk about Terry Collins today because there's a lot of people that have been questioning whether or not he's the right guy for this job, not unlike the last few years. It seems like they question all the time, especially when the team isn't playing all that well. What do you think? Just kind of a general overview of Terry Collins as a manager.
Rob, I mean, there are lots of people who are never convinced that Terry Collins should manage the Mets anyway. So if you were the person who thought that Terry Collins wasn't the right guy in July of 2014 or July of 2015, you certainly don't think he's the right guy in June of 2016. In the interim, the Mets went to the World Series, and you know, Terry Collins, you know, pluses and minuses were on view for everybody. We know he's not a good in-game manager. In fact, he's probably a poor in-game manager. But supposedly last year when the team was winning, he was good at chemistry. Now all of a sudden he's bad at it. And you know, managers get too much credit when things are good, and they get too much blame when things are bad. So, you know, Terry Collins didn't break David Wright's back. He didn't hurt Travis d'Arnaud's shoulder. He didn't hit Lucas Duda in the back either. So, you know, there's an element of stuff that he can't control, and there's a lot of stuff he can control in-game. And the question really is whether he's getting the most out of this roster. And based on this offensive performance, it's hard to say he is, but it's certainly a worse roster than the Mets thought they had. How's that for a thesis?
No, I think that's perfect. Absolutely. And I agree with everything you just said. They get too much blame when things are going poorly, and they get too much credit probably when things are going really well. And there's examples throughout the years where you can really pinpoint almost every manager around big league baseball and cite kind of that same idea. So I'm curious though, what the thought is and the feeling is from a guy's perspective who's around him every single day, essentially. And that's what Wayne Randazzo is. He interviews him on a regular basis on the WOR Mets Radio Network. So we're going to welcome in Wayne and get his thoughts and feelings on Terry Collins as a manager overall. So with that, Wayne, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Excellent. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate you asking. You're obviously at the Met game right now as we're recording on Tuesday, so we won't keep you for too long. But we're doing a Terry Collins-focused show today. And I just mentioned to the folks that we want to get the perspective of somebody who's around him on a regular basis. And you're there essentially with him every day. You interview him on a regular basis for WOR and for the pregame and postgame shows. What are your overall thoughts on Terry as a manager?
Well, you know, I think Terry Collins does a great job in what I believe is the manager's number one duty, and that is to manage the players as people, manage them not as professional baseball players who go out there and do what they once they get out there, that's their job. Their job is to go play, but it's Terry's job to kind of massage these personalities, these egos, and make sure that everybody's ready to go out there on a daily basis to do what they're supposed to do. And, you know, at that point, what you guys see on TV or listen to on the radio every day, pretty much all out of Terry Collins' hands. Anybody can write down names in a lineup. You might want to flip a guy here or there, but really a lineup construction, while can be somewhat of a deal, is never really a make or break for any team. You stick the guys in there who you have. And, you know, the bullpen, a lot of people get up in arms about bullpen strategy and all that. Again, these pieces are in place. Addison Reed's going to pitch the eighth. Familia is going to pitch the ninth. You match up some lefties. Really, that stuff's not terribly hard. But what is hard is being able to go and talk to these guys every day, communicate with the players as much as Terry Collins does, having to deal with the media. You're not only managing the players, you're managing the media every day. Terry Collins speaks to the media before the game. He speaks to them after the game. He talks to reporters individually. He does an interview with me every day. There's a lot going on with that job that has nothing to do with the actual game, and I think Terry Collins does a terrific job at all of that.
Right. He's managing a lot of sets of expectations, and you got that in the media answer. But, you know, there were a lot of fans up in arms after the Mets got swept by the Braves. They played badly all weekend, for example. Do you get the feeling that anything has changed in the way that the players look at Terry Collins as we move into June of a season after the Mets went to the World Series?
I think to a man, they love Terry. I think that they really respect him and respect the way that he falls on the sword for them daily. You know, who does Terry Collins blame for getting swept in a three-game series by the Atlanta Braves? Did he blame one individual player? Did he single anybody out? Did he say so-and-so had a bad series, that's why we lost? He never said any of those things, and he never will. Terry Collins, I asked him today about the rumors swirling about Jose Reyes or Ulieski Gurriel and how that affects him and if he does want more offense. And he said simply that it's not his job to wish for more offense. It's his job to get the most out of the players that he has. And that's him going to bat for these guys. He doesn't want to say they need more help, because then that would say that the guys here aren't doing their jobs. And even though that might be obvious to you, and it might be obvious to Mets fans, that there are some players who aren't holding up their end of the bargain, Terry Collins is not going to single out anyone or make anybody in that clubhouse think it's because of them.
With all of this said, have you gotten any sense that the front office is not happy with him at any point?
Well, I think what the front office wants from their manager is a guy who's going to go out and work with the players that they've put together. I think this front office especially views managers as somebody who is not quite at the same level as the hierarchy of upper management. It's not quite the synergy that you might see with some other organizations that have their manager more involved in player acquisitions and that sort of thing. I think the upper management makes all those decisions, and Terry Collins just kind of goes from there. So I don't think there's any dissatisfaction with anything that Terry Collins has provided. But, you know, this is a business. There are expectations. And if the Mets were to go south here, which I don't think they will, but if they do, then obviously the situation has to change. You can't fire the starting rotation. You can't fire the whole starting lineup. So the first thing you do is think about having a new voice to talk to the players. Maybe the current voice isn't working, but I think Terry Collins' voice has worked. It did work to get this team to the World Series. And even in years past, when the team wasn't as talented as they are now, you still saw them fight and try to get victories all the way up through the end of whatever tumultuous seasons there were before 2015. So I think Terry Collins is more than safe right now, and I think that won't change unless the Mets really have a terrible second half of the year.
Wayne, what was your interpretation of Sunday's comments about shaking things up? And in the meantime, the Mets have certainly had some roster churn at the back. Logan Verrett has come and gone. Eric Goodell is back on the roster. Ty Kelly is gone. I mean, it's really stuff at the back end of the roster. Was that just a manager being frustrated?
Sure, he was frustrated, and I think what it comes down to is, you know, that there is a lot of excess when it comes to this particular fan base and this particular organization, that there are a lot of things that Terry Collins has to deal with in New York that he never had to deal with in Houston or even Anaheim. So I think that it what comes with winning, there is much more expectation to continue to win, especially with a roster that on paper does look like it is capable of winning again. So, yeah, he's going to say some things after a particularly disappointing weekend out of frustration. And maybe he didn't mean shake up the roster necessarily. Maybe he just meant that the players on the roster need a bit of a shake up, and that they need to keep holding their end of the deal here and do what they're supposed to do. So he could have meant anything by that. But was he frustrated? Of course.
We certainly plan to talk a little bit about Jose Reyes and Yuliesky Gurriel and those possibilities. The Mets, it seems like, are the ones that are responsible, somebody in the organization, whether it be Jeff Wilpon or whether it be lower than that on the totem pole, floated the idea that the Mets are at least contemplating it. We certainly know that Jose Reyes would love to be back in New York. Whether Gurriel is worth the money, who knows? But what are your thoughts on both of those players, and do you see either one happening for the Mets?
Well, we'll start with the easy one. Yuliesky Gurriel is a guy who's in his early 30s, as far as we know. He was a very, very good player in Cuba. Yoenis Cespedes had nothing but good things to say about him, but Cespedes hasn't seen him play in 5 years. So I don't know what kind of player Yuliesky Gurriel is. That's the point of the workouts. Nobody knows. People are saying they should sign Gurriel. Nobody knows what this guy can do.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what type of player he is. The Mets will find that out. They will do their due diligence to see what type of player he is. And if he's a fit, if he can help this team this year win a championship, because if you think about a championship window here, you think about the starting pitching, but I think you also have to consider Yoenis Cespedes and his time with the Mets too. And at this point, you don't know how long that time is after this season, if it's any after this year. So if Gurriel helps them win a championship in 2016, then I think the Mets will take a very long look, but that won't be determined until they see him in a workout. And as far as Reyes is concerned, there's a lot to swallow there. That's not a simple question. It's certainly he has a past here. He's a guy who was a Met legend for a long time, and I think that because of that comfort and familiarity, Reyes is a lot more attractive to the Mets than he would be to the St. Louis Cardinals or any other team that might need some help on the infield that's trying to compete. So could they take a flyer on a guy who could give them a spark, especially when he first comes back? I think that it's a possibility. And then there's the question of some of the other baggage that now comes with Jose Reyes and if it's worth it to have him on this ball club. So there's a lot to weigh there, but I think they are weighing it. And if Reyes does make it free agency, if another team doesn't swoop in now and make a trade for him, then I think Reyes' first bet will be to go back to the Mets and see what's what. So I think it'll be an interesting weekend if that does happen.
Wayne, we appreciate a few minutes with you. Thank you so very much for taking the time. And, again, we know it's in the middle of a game, so thanks again for breaking away for a few.
Sure, no problem.
Thanks again to Wayne Randazzo, great voice of the New York Mets on WOR. Does a wonderful job filling in again with the play-by-play when Howie or Josh is gone, and then also doing pre-post. We've had him on a couple of times now, and always appreciate a few minutes with him. Don't forget, before we start talking about Terry Collins a little bit more and more Jose Reyes, check out two of our original hockey podcasts, the Islanders Point Blank podcast and the Rangers Blue Line, both hosted by Brian Compton. He's fantastic. This week, Brian and the guests preview free agency and look at the possibility of trading the likes of Derek Stepan, Rick Nash, and Yaroslav Halak from their respective teams in the coming weeks. To download either show, just subscribe to the SMY.TV audio network wherever you listen to your podcasts. I did a pretty good job with those hockey names, eh?
I'm impressed. I'm glad you're doing the reads this week and not me. to sound a little bit like Keith Hernandez out there.
That's right. I do okay. I watch some hockey here and there. All right, let's get back into Terry just for a second to wrap that portion of our show up. I think both of us, and as you said at the very open, question some of the moves that he makes on a regular basis in game managing. But I think Wayne said it best. His strength, his strong suit, is the way he handles the players, the way he handles the media, the things that go into managing that I think the general fan doesn't really think about when they say and yell and scream on Twitter, fire Terry, every time something doesn't go well for the team on the field. And to me, Toby, it's just not fair. It's not fair to the manager when you're going to do that. You have to look at the overall package.
I think part of the problem is there that Terry's flaws are very apparent and his strengths are not.
Because people see them.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. At the same time, I mean, the in-game stuff is crazy. I thought the craziest. So who's been the Mets' best player in the first half? Oh, this is a way of setting up my point.
Offensively, I would say Yoenis Cespedes.
No. Best player on the team.
Well, I would take Noah Syndergaard.
Right, Thor. So he's a guy that you're going to need. So his last start, he was brilliant, and the Mets actually, by accident, scored some runs for him. Right?
Yes.
Last week, Thursday night, was it?
Sounds right, yeah.
And so at just shy of 100 pitches, he started the ninth inning in a blowout game with the outcome of the game in no doubt, right? You could have asked Dan Worthen to go throw some baseballs, and he probably could have got you three outs eventually.
Correct.
Or the Mets gave up 10 runs. So the marginal benefit of throwing Noah Syndergaard on the ninth was close to zero. Now, the cost wasn't that extreme. He threw 20 pitches. He got a couple – he got to get one out or something. He didn't get out of the ninth. He ended up being charged with a run.
Right.
All in the name of throwing a shutout and learning to throw a complete game, which Ron Darling praised on SNY, and which was crazy, right? Any extra stress on Syndergaard's arm is bad. You want to get that guy a good night's work. He got in a great night's work through eight. Mm-hmm. I thought throwing him out in the ninth was crazy. And one batter too long is the Terry Collins story. It was in the World Series a year ago. It really looks like he hasn't learned his lesson.
Well, I see it from both sides, to be honest with you. I get everything you just said, and it's hard to disagree with it. I think that there is something mentally for a pitcher to get over that hurdle. So I also understand that perspective as well. I don't know which one I should take strong, but I do think that there's a mental aspect to pitching. And I think, especially for a young guy like that, to be able to know he can get through nine if he has to, I think there's some advantage to that down the road. But I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, does it help him in that game? No. Are you putting extra stress on his arm? Sure you are. Of course, every additional pitch does. So I understand it from both sides.
Every fatigue pitch. I mean, those are pitches above. And look, he's a young, big, strong kid, right? I'm not saying any single pitch is going to break him, but the cumulative stress matters.
It could, absolutely. But, you know, then it gets into a deeper point, which is, you know, the Nolan Ryan perspective that these guys are being coddled too much and they're not throwing enough, right? The whole nine yards. So who knows? Now, the one thing I will say about Terry, and we've pointed this out over the last few years, is we don't particularly love his managing of the bullpen. That he generally will, and it goes back to what you just said again, which is sometimes he keeps guys in a little bit too long. And I guess there are certain points where you can say, gosh, you really wish he wouldn't have kept, let's say, Jim Henderson in for as long as he did, or go back to Jim Henderson on back-to-back days this year. Same thing he did with Scott Rice, and it really puts stress on those guys who have already been through surgery.
I would clarify, it's starters too long, and it's relievers sort of too much even.
Right, just back-to-back days or 3 days in a row, the whole nine yards.
Right, so then you get into a situation, again, where the Terry Collins story, one batter too long on, what was the night? Tuesday night. Bartolo Colon takes a line drive off his thumb, and Hansel Robles comes in and looks like a massively upgraded version of Hansel Robles. He's throwing his slider looks great. He's throwing his changeup well. And then he batted in, I guess, the bottom of the third, and he faced the top of the Royals lineup in the fourth, and already up to basically a season high in innings, and he got through the top of the fourth.
Career high in innings, by the way.
Right, which he reached in the fifth when Terry Collins left him on the mound again, one inning too long, and he gave up a run, and Eric Goodell had to do some fancy footwork to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And again, the Mets, it didn't hurt the Mets. They won a one-run game, but if you ask guys to stretch to career longs, you're asking for trouble, and Robles gave up a run and it turned a two-run game into a one-run game.
Right.
He just hasn't learned the lesson about a batter too long.
But the other side of that is the situation.
I know, there was no Sean Gilmartin. He needed to get innings.
Right. His designated quote-unquote long man, Sean Gilmartin, wasn't available because he had pitched on Sunday for Vegas and he'd just gotten called up. So you didn't have him. Of course, you lose Colon with one out in the first inning. So you have to get through an entire game.
That's right. They got the out. Sorry. Yeah.
With essentially no long man. So Robles, in effect, kind of bit the bullet a little bit for them and bite the bullet. I mean, that was obviously before he went out and just absolutely dominated. He was great. Yep. I agree with you. He didn't look good in that last inning. In the fifth inning, he got obviously worn down. It was over at that point. His fastball had gone from 97 to 92, 93.
Yeah.
He was tired. He was ready to end the night. Yep. But I also do understand from Terry's perspective, hey, I need somebody out there, and I've got to get through these innings. I didn't have as much of a problem with it as everyone else did, because I think if he had just gotten through that fifth inning, 1, 2, 3, people would have looked at it like, he did his job.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always a rationale on the other side, but it's not systematic enough, and there is a systematic problem too far on the starters.
Right.
This is sort of the this is sort of the airing of grievances for you folks who know that's a great holiday. you know, the other thing is Curtis Granderson hitting leadoff. The dude is what, a 302 on base percentage or something, Rob? Are you sitting in front of your computer?
I am.
It's not good.
It's not good. No. He's been bad.
it's below 310. He, you know, there's no law that says Curtis Granderson has to lead off. And I realize as I'm saying this, as Wayne pointed out, lineup construction is not a huge deal. I think it accounts for like 2%, you know, increase. Optimizing lineup might be 2% of runs in a given year, maybe less. But, you know, you're giving, and there aren't a lot of other great options, right? David Wright was a pretty good on base guy, certainly not available. So Granderson runs decently. So, but the point is he can't lead off against lefties. Collins is way too stubborn about that.
But just look at the other options.
Even when he's hitting well, right? So, you know, that bothers me, although I understand it's not a big deal.
Yeah, 313 on the on-base percentage for Granderson, by the way. And again, you know, again, with the options here, Lagares is on the disabled list, so you've lost that as an option. Conforto hasn't done anything. You can't really use him in that role anyway. I mean, there just aren't very many options on this team as a quote-unquote leadoff guy. I don't really mind that so much. You know, let's kind of sum it up here with Terry.
Go ahead. How much culpability does he bear for any of Michael Conforto's struggles? The answers could be zero, a little, some, a lot, or all of it.
And you're referring to essentially sitting him now against all lefties.
Him against lefties. You know, Keith Hernandez did a riff the other night. I guess it was the Mets were off Monday, so probably Tuesday, about how Conforto looks confident and Conforto promptly rewarded him by popping out.
Right.
Conforto has said in the press at times that he's not sure of himself, so it's hard to know who to believe.
I have no problem.
He's basically sitting against lefties. What do you think about the way Terry Collins has handled him?
I have zero problem with the way that he's handled him. None. Because you know what? When it comes down to it, do you or I or any fan on Twitter really know how to handle a big league baseball player when they're in their rookie season, or well, it's his second season, I guess, but you know, really a very young player in the league and how to get that
first full season. Yeah.
And I know people say, oh, that's such a silly response. And it's a weak response. And I've given it in regard to a few different things when people question what the manager does, but in reality, I don't have an answer. You know, is the best way to handle a young player to sit him occasionally when he's struggling or to just play him and get him through it? I don't know, but you have to also keep in mind, Terry has the pressure of trying to win a World Series this year. This isn't a situation where he can afford to just take his time with a guy because he thinks it's better for the guy's career long term. Yeah, you have to balance those two things, but at the same time, you're trying to win right now. So he's doing the best that he can. I know 100% he's not making these decisions on his own. The front office is involved in everything that goes on with the New York Mets, and they always have been. So to suggest that this is only Terry that's saying, yeah, let's sit him, I think that's nuts. I think Kevin Long's also involved in this. So I have no issue with that. I have no issue really with the way that Terry does anything out there on the field, except for the occasional bullpen, I think, mishap, where he, you know, calls on a guy that maybe shouldn't be out there two or three days in a row, that kind of thing. But, you know, we brought this up in the past. I think bullpens are overused to begin with. And I think, if baseball wanted to be fair, because they're being used so much, they'd probably put two or three extra roster spots out there for bullpen arms, because these guys just get blown out all the time. So I guess it's a long-winded answer to your question. No, I have no issue with it. It sounds like you do.
If you're going to sit one of your left-handed hitting outfielders against a lefty and play Lagares, I guess you could also play Deaza and go full platoon. Shouldn't you sit Granderson?
Yeah, I guess you could occasionally.
Granderson can't hit lefties. You think Conforto can't.
No, but I think you want Granderson's bat in the lineup. I think you do, because he's a big league hitter, and you feel like at any moment he could pop one. And I know I get your point. He's just not hitting them. But, you know, this offense is so limited and they have so many non-big leaguers at the back end of their bench. I just don't know where you go. And it's not like Alejandro Diaz is doing anything. So you really have three outfielders right now that you could play that are worth anything. So I think you just kind of have to roll with Granderson and get him through this. Look, we don't have too much longer, Toby. So let's kind of shift off of the manager and move to the potential next guy who could be the last guy on the bench or maybe even a starter. And we talked about Jose Reyes a little bit with Wayne, but want to get your feelings on Reyes and if you think this makes sense at all.
Well, Reyes is probably a better player than Matt Reynolds, even in his diminished form. I mean, last year he had a 310 on base percentage playing over half his games in Coors Field. We'll leave the off-field stuff, and by that I mean domestic violence. Let's be clear about that, and it's bad. Aside, but I think you're just asking, can he help the Mets on the field?
From a baseball perspective,
yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, he probably could, right? If you don't think he's better than – the question is whether he's better than Matt Reynolds, and whether, you know, adding him to the middle infield mix with his Drubal Cabrera and Neil Walker makes the Mets better. And the answer is it probably does. Mm-hmm. Not by a lot.
Okay.
He's diminished. He's not running as much. The power is way down. But
he's horrendous defensively.
It's a small improvement. The question is whether it allows you some flexibility to, you know, move Walker to third and play Reyes at second, although we remember the last time that happened.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky dance. I don't think there's a huge improvement. This is not the Reyes who won a batting title 7 years ago.
No, and I think most fans think that it is. He's been gone long enough where they just kind of forgot all those years went by, and he's the same guy. We're getting Jose Reyes.
What year was that? When did he win the batting title? Was it not even 6 years? It was less than
11. It was 11, wasn't it?
Okay, so 5 years. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. So here's my thoughts on this. I don't think it makes sense at all from a baseball perspective or from a PR perspective. I can't put behind me the domestic violence stuff because there's a huge difference. Everyone keeps pointing out, well, this is like Aroldis Chapman, and the Yankee fans have embraced him, and baseball's just kind of forgotten. It's not like Aroldis Chapman. Is he a dummy too? And is what he did more than likely really, really stupid? Yeah, probably was. I wasn't there. I did read the report. I think he's an idiot for doing what he did. Was he arrested that night, Aroldis Chapman? Nope, wasn't. Cops down there didn't find enough evidence to arrest him. And to me, that's the big difference here. Police in Hawaii found enough evidence to arrest Jose Reyes. The reason he didn't have to go to trial or to court on this is because his wife or girlfriend, whatever she is, had no interest in being a part of it and denied testifying. So
I don't know that that's a great line, but she did. What? No, I don't know that the arrest is a great line. Regarding the severity of
if they found enough evidence to, and like I said, I'm not
I agree with you, and I'm not in any way minimizing domestic violence. I'm just, and Reyes obviously was
Reyes did
something, and it yes. looked bad, and the fact that he's not convicted is not evidence of real innocence either.
That's correct.
But what I'm struggling with is the distinction that Chapman's was less severe because he wasn't arrested. I think that gives too much credit sort of to the cops.
Well, you have to keep in mind who you're talking to and what profession I used to
work
you,
in. To be fair, Rob is a former cop. I don't mean to knock cops here.
No. And I've seen it from both sides, and I understand what you're talking about. And again, I'm not taking away from what Chapman did. He probably did something really stupid, but not to the point where he did get arrested. And I am going to give credit to the police of the world because I know what they do and what they go through and what they're investigating. And I still think what Jose Reyes did, if it was enough to get him arrested, and because she wouldn't testify, which happens all the time all over this country, I just can't get past it. So the domestic violence thing is one thing. As far as the baseball perspective goes, he's a shortstop who isn't very good anymore. There is no shortstop opening on this team, so you can't play him there anyway. So you're asking a guy who's never really played third base to come in and play third for you, or as you said, second, where he wasn't comfortable in the past, and now you're going to shift Neil Walker for him. I don't get it. I don't think it makes any sense. And also the idea that you couldn't just bring up Dilson Herrera to be the last guy on the bench and that he could probably be pretty close to as good as Reyes would down the stretch, I don't see it. And I know Gary Cohen questioned that on the air last night too during the Met Royal game. So I don't get it from any baseball perspective. I do, however, Toby, understand the Gurriel interest. And if he can find a way to help this team, if he can help them down the stretch and you're only giving up money for him, albeit a lot of it, boy, that's an intriguing place to go.
I'll point out one thing with Gurriel, and I don't remember the Cespedes timing as much, but often the Cuban guys need a couple months in the minors even to acclimate to American baseball. And, you know, Gurriel hasn't played a lot of competitive baseball in the last year. So, you know, if it's a 2016 play, I think we need to temper expectations a little bit, right? I mean, yep. You know, think back to Diane Vicieto and a bunch of the other Cuban defectors. A lot of those guys go down to the minors for a couple months to get themselves back in game shape, playing shape, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
right. So this might not be an immediate thing.
I don't think you can sign him on July 1. Let's just say he makes a decision on July 1. Right. I don't think you in 2 weeks, right? So he goes and has a couple workouts. Everyone makes some offers. They do some issue. It's going to take a little bit. So you sign him July 1. You know, he's going to need time to get his timing right. So, right. And as you and Wayne pointed out, this is a team trying to win big league baseball games. So they're going to send him to, you know, Vegas or Binghamton for a couple weeks, and then you're not going to see him until August 1. you know, you've got to believe that he's a fit beyond this year, and he's got to fit in the plan. So it's not a great short-term play. If you does that make sense?
No, it does. It absolutely makes sense. 110%.
You know, I'm old enough to remember the 2000 and boy, I want to say five. What was the Cuban defector? Ole Soler was going to save that rotation and take the Mets.
Yeah,
to the
no, there's a lot of examples of guys that haven't worked out, and Soler is one of those guys, and Ara Brain is one of those guys, and there's a lot of them. But anyway, we got to wrap up because our studio has to shut down for the day. Again, thanks to Wayne Randazzo. That was fantastic. If you have any other questions about this or you want to hit Toby Hyde and I up on Twitter, you can do that. You're at Toby Hyde, right? Just the basic
at Toby Hyde. Hyde. Yep.
And I'm at Robert Brender. So feel free. God, I don't mind creative. Talking about it. Yeah, we really are. Again, thanks to the folks back in the studio. Great job by Jason Pateri filling in this week. Thanks to Wayne Randazzo from WOR. Congratulations to the Cavs, world champs. They're celebrating as we're doing this podcast. I'm Rob Brender. We will see you next week on the Mostly Mets podcast.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.